सो भगवान आंसर्स, श्री भगवान उवाच लोकेस्मिन् द्विविधा निष्ठा पुरा प्रोक्ता मया नघ ज्ञानयोगेन सांख्यानां कर्मयोगेन योगिनां। सो श्री द लॉर्ड, श्री भगवान, ही सेड, व्हाट डिड ही से? अस्मिन् लोके, दिस द सेवेंथ केस, अस्मिन् इन दिस वर्ल्ड, द्विविधा निष्ठा, टू काइंड्स ऑफ निष्ठा. निष्ठा हैज मेनी मीनिंग्स. निष्ठा मीन्स फेथ, निष्ठा मीन्स अबाइडेंस. हियर निष्ठा मीन्स द पैथ दैट यू क्लियरली फॉलो. सो विथ फर्म फेथ यू अबाइड इन दैट, दैट इज कॉल्ड निष्ठा. एंड दिस इज द पाथ ऑफ दिस पाथ. पुरा प्रोक्ता मया, मया बाय मी, अर्लियर इट वॉज सेड. वैन पुरा मीन्स बिफोर द डॉन ऑफ टाइम, बिफोर क्रिएशन, बाय मी इट वॉज सेड. Anaka, O sinless one. So here, look at how lovingly he addresses Arjuna. Anaka, O pure one, O sinless one. He does not say, Are Buddhu, look at my second chapter, look at the CDs, buy some CDs so you can listen to my... I already answered this question. He doesn't say that. Very politely, very loving. See, that's the Lord's compassion. Again and again, Arjuna keeps asking similar question. Very patiently, very compassionately, lovingly he answers. He does not criticize, oh, these are two useless questions, I already addressed it. No. Again, you are asking, okay, I will answer because you are so pure-hearted. Anaga, lokesmin dvividha. There are two kinds of path and which have been told by me before time, pura, before creation. So actually he says the same thing in the fourth chapter. He says, this knowledge that I gave in to you, I gave it to the sun god. So Arjuna asks, he says, Bhagwan, you were only born, I know you are only, I think he was like 60 or 70 years when he gave the message. He said, you were born a few years ago. How could you have given this knowledge to the sun god? And how can you say that I gave this path at the dawn of creation when the universe started? So we'll talk about that. Pura prokta mayanaga. So he says there are two paths, jnana yogena sankhyanam. Sankhya means, here it means the wise people who have reduced their desires, clarified their understanding, and done lot of service. So jnana yoga. For them, sankhya means the wise people. For them, jnana yoga. And karma yogena yoginam. And for the others like us who are still have lot of desires, then karma yoga for the other people, the yogis. Here yogi does not mean the enlightened yogis in the, but those who are on this path. So there are two paths. So there are people who are extrovert and people who are introvert. Say if I am very extroverted or if I am very active, Then he says, you, for you to sit and meditate will be very difficult. You sit in one place and say, Om, and I am that. You can't. So you start with the path of knowledge, with the path of service, and reduce your extroverted desires by dedicating your activities to Lord, doing service. But somebody who is introvert, who has already done lot of service and his mind is quiet, then for him path of knowledge and path of meditation. So an active extrovert person to the path of karma yoga. If you are more quiet, more introvert, more meditative, then you choose the path of knowledge. And then as we said, if you have lot of love in your heart, choose the path of bhakti. So people say, I am ready for knowledge, I don't think I need to do all this karma yoga and all, I am ready. So Swami Bodhatmananda ji in his commentary says, if you think you are ready, then read Kathopanishad. In Kathopanishad, the student Nachiketa is a young boy. And when he asked this question to Yamaraja, I want the highest knowledge. Yamaraja said, there's this little boy, what will he understand? So he says, you know, it's not your time. Go and enjoy life. You need to grow up, enjoy life, and then later on you come, I'll give you the knowledge. So Nachiketa says, what are you going to give me? He says, you can have long life. As long as you want to live, you can live. Okay? And then you'll have children and grandchildren who will be very healthy, very bright. Okay? And then you can have the lordship of the whole earth. You will be the king of the whole earth. Yes? And you will be healthy. You will be wise. Okay? And then you can have all the money you want and the palace and the wealth and everything. So he said, okay, you're going to give me all that? He says, yeah. He says, I'll give you all that. Don't ask this question about, you know, what is happens after that. Don't ask this question about wisdom. So Nachiketa says, tell me first of all, you're telling me I'll live long life, I'll have all the money and kingship and lordship. Will it last me forever? He says, no, whatever on earth you are given will be taken away. He says, then you can keep your horses, keep your elephants, keep your money, keep your kingship, keep everything. I don't want any of those. I want this knowledge. So do we have that kind of vairagya, that kind of dispassion? That is how you should approach that. Nothing in this world you can give me will equal that Brahma Vidya. If you have that kind of discrimination and that kind of vairagya, then your progress is guaranteed. Again, does not mean that until I become like Nachiketa, I should not study. No, as you keep on studying, this knowledge creates its own vairagya, creates its own dispassion. So keep on doing that. But then they say there are exceptions, like Raman Maharishi. Raman Maharishi was a great sage in the 20th century in South India. He never went to a guru. He never did any karma yoga. By age 6 or 7, he was going into deep samadhi. Actually, there's a story where a neighbor grandfather died, and they took him away, the body, and he said, what is death? So his father said, you know, this grandpa neighbor died, so, you know, they're taking him to the funeral home. He said, I need to experience what is death. He was like 7 or 8 years old. So he closes his door and he says, let me see what is death. He had heard that death means your body stops working and your breath stops working and your mind stops working, everything stops. He said, let me experience. So this young boy closes the door. First of all, he shuts off his body completely, including his breath. He shut off his breath and his body was completely still and lifeless. Then he said, my mind is still working. So he shuts off his mind at that deep meditation. His mind became still, his breath became still, his heart was not beating, his body was completely still. But he said, there is something in me I'm not able to shut off. That was the Om, the consciousness. He said, I cannot shut that off. I could shut off my breath, I could shut off my heart, my body. What is that I could not shut off? That was his search. And so the rest of his life, he spent in searching and finally coming to know, who am I? So they say, well, he never went to a guru. He never did any karma yoga. Well, those are exceptions. Those are people who in their previous birth have done karma yoga, have sat at the feet of the guru. They have already studied, but now they are on the path of realization. So those are exceptions. But for the majority of us, we have to follow the steps. You cannot, see, it's like climbing the stairs or taking the elevator. For most of us, you have to climb the step 1, 2, 3, 4. But there are a few people who are so enlightened from birth, they directly can take the elevator. Like Shankaracharya ji, even though he went to a guru, but even when he was young, he was already writing commentaries on Gita and all that. So then the question is, who is Krishna? Again, you know, remember Arjuna asked, you were only born 60, 70 years ago. How could you teach this knowledge to sun god? And here he says, before the dawn of time, before even earth started, I gave these two paths. Because Krishna at that time, Gurudev says in his commentary, is not the flute player of Vrindavan, not the darling of the gopis, but he is the total consciousness, Brahman, that created this universe. And so when he says I, he does not mean I Krishna, but I that Brahman, that total consciousness. So that is what Krishna is saying when he says, Maya, it has been taught by me before. And that is the only reason that Gita is eternal. See, most of the other philosophies, whether it's socialism or communism, it changes after a while. You know, it like if the communism of Marx and Lenin has changed so much. Now Russia and China are totally capitalistic economies. They claim to be communist, but they are dictatorial and capitalistic. They are interested in making money. There's the welfare of the masses is long gone. Similarly, all the other philosophies and all the other teachings, so many teachers have come, so many different philosophies have come. They come and go, but the Gita, even several thousand years later, 7,000-8,000 years later, is still valid. Why? Because it is given by the Lord himself, not by an ordinary mortal. Any theory made by a mortal will die with time, but that given by the Lord is eternal. The other thing Krishna wants to know, from which perspective, why is Arjuna asking this question? See, when a student asks the question, the teacher has to look and see what is the student's point of view. Why is Arjuna asking this question? Why is he confused? So that's why his answer has to be tailored to the student's question. If you're talking to a little child and the child asks a question, your answer will be different as opposed to a teenager. And a teenager's answer will be different as opposed to an adult. So depending on the person you are talking to, so like a 16-year-old girl asks her parents, so what are we doing this weekend? What are we doing does not mean that what are you doing or I want to go out with you. It is how can I make a program with my friends. When she says what are we doing, it is what am I doing. She doesn't care as long as I get to go out with my friends. Or, people always say, why did God create this world? And when do they ask this question? Not when things are going well. When things are going well, I did it. But when some little suffering comes, oh, Bhagawan, why did you create this world? There is so much misery and so much suffering that you only see when you are having problems. When I was fine, then everything is fine. Then nobody will ask, why did God create this world? So depending on the perspective, that's what Krishna's answer will be, depending on Arjuna's. And one last point, even in the gunas, there is tamas, rajas, and sattva. So in this verse, what Bhagavan is saying, that from tamas you go to rajas. Tamas is laziness, indolence, ignorance. From laziness you go to rajas, which is activity. But then don't just stay in activity. From rajas you go to sattva. Go to knowledge, go to purity. So the whole Gita is taking us from ignorance, from laziness to activity, and from activity to knowledge. So it is a stepwise progression. So that is the sequence how the Bhagavad Gita operates, and that is what we have to do with our life. If I am lazy, I'm not doing much, start, going and working, serving the world. But then don't only remain. Some people say, I'm a karma yogi, my desire is to work. That's good, but start knowing who is that God that I am serving, why am I serving, and how can I reach that God. So that is the essence of this third verse, where Bhagavan is now slowly answering his question and saying there are two paths, but it depends on your level. If you are an extrovert, do the path of service. If you are an introvert, do the path of knowledge, and then sequentially progress. So these three verses we covered today. We have about 20 minutes or so. So we have plenty of time. So if there's any questions, any comments, either about these or anything else you may think of. Yes.
The question Arjuna asked, what is the best path for me? Are we going to cover in the next one, or you can answer that?
For him?
Yeah, when he asked Krishna, what is the best?
I think Krishna tells him, for you, the best is path of action.
Okay.
path of karma yoga, because you have to do what is right. And he also answers in the second chapter that, you know, what is your duty as a kshatriya. He says, as a kshatriya, your duty is that when they are faced with evil, then you have to do that. If you don't do it, he says that by killing these people, I will go to hell. Krishna says, by not doing your duty, you are not performing your duty. So at this moment, he wanted the path of knowledge. Arjuna wanted to go to the forest, put on orange clothes and meditate. So just as for him, it was his duty at that time to act. And that's what but nowhere does Bhagwan tell Arjuna that you have to do. He says, yat echasi tatha kuru. Even after 18 chapters, in the end, he says, I have given you this knowledge, now do as you wish. Nowhere is there a command, but for him, at that moment, it was to do his duty. And so similarly, each one of us are faced with life situations. And so the Bhagavad Gita is for us to how to boldly face the world situation. But yeah, no, he tells him throughout the Gita that that is your duty, you have to fight.
So in end of the Gita, he's ready to take karma apart. But at second chapter, where he's not mentally ready, that's when he wants to go to the knowledge way, because he wants to avoid the war.
Yes.
Killing his extended family and all. So that, I think, it doesn't reflect his state of mind.
Absolutely. Right. Very true. No, very good. Because Gurudev says that he was in a anxiety neurosis, because he came there with his chariot ready to fight, and he tells Krishna in the first chapter, put my chariot in between so I may see all these evil people that I have. But then when he sees, then his mind gets deluded, because they are my uncle and my cousins and my teacher and my grandfather and all those and near and dear ones, and then with this war there's going to be so much destruction, and dharma will be destroyed, and society will be, you know, suffered, and women will become. So then all those things happen and his mind starts getting confused, and that's when he approaches Krishna and says, I don't know what is my duty. And so that's exactly true. His mind was in a state of anxiety and confusion. And that's why he did not know. That's why he says, no, tell me what is Shreya, what is good for me. Yena Shreyo Hamapnuyam. So please tell me, because I am confused, I don't know. So yes, that was his state of mind. There were three things. Last week we talked about Bhaya, Shoka and Moha. He was suffering from three things. Shoka was for the past, what he has seen and done. Bhaya is for the future, what will happen. And moha is the present delusion. So in the past he had said, oh, war is bad. And then in the present he is confused, and then the future. So all three things he was. His shoka of the past, bhaya of the future, and moha of the present. He was suffering from three problems. You know, you and I sometimes have one, and you only have shoka, you become useless. Or only have bhaya, fear, you become useless. But if you have all three, how hard it would be. So that was his state. Yes. Thank you. That's a good question. Yeah.
But Lord Krishna took the chariot and placed it in front of Bhishma and Drona instead of putting it in front of Duryodhana and Karna, right? So did he say, did he want Arjuna not to fight for revenge, but to fight for the right path, to do the right thing, because... for the people, or did
No, that's a very, very good question. Actually, if he had placed in front of Duryodhana, we would not have had the Bhagavad Gita. The 700 verses came because he was mischievous. See, Krishna by nature was. So he said, let me play. And that's why purposely he put in front of Drona and Bhishma. He said, let me see whether he is really ready or not. See, Arjuna was all full of enthusiasm, but inside he was not that strong. So Bhagwan wanted to teach him and give him the right knowledge. You are absolutely right. That's why purposely he put in front of Drona and Bhishma. If he had put in front of Duryodhana, war would have started, it would have ended, and he would not have had these 18 chapters. So I'm so glad he did. Yes.
What happens to a society if it loses the knowledge?
I think what happens to the society that loses the knowledge, they become very materialistic, become very corrupt, become very violent, like happened in the Roman Empire. You know, when the Roman Empire was at its height, it was growing so fast, and then they became so corrupt, and you know, they accumulated so much wealth from stealing from all the other kingdoms that they said, now we have to just enjoy life. So they had used to have parties and drink and eat and do all kind of pleasures, and they no longer were the warlike. They no longer were able to sustain their vigor and their so. And of course, in their case, it was for the war. But when society loses its knowledge, then it becomes more materialistic, becomes more corrupt, becomes more dishonest. And unfortunately, we are seeing that. That is Kali Yuga. That is the lowest. You know, they say there is Satyuga, Dwapar, Treta, and then Kali Yuga, four yugas. So right now, we are in Kali Yuga, which is the lowest. But then there is hope, because they said from Kali Yuga, then Satyuga starts again. So the good times will come. So society will sink to its depth. And when finally, when people are tired of that misery, then they will turn towards this knowledge. So the fact that, you know, so many of us are here listening to the Bhagavad Gita, so many teachers throughout the world are teaching, shows that there is still hope for mankind. You know, so it teaches people like Gurudev and all the other acharyas of Chinmaya Mission. And same thing with Ramakrishna Mission and all the Christian. There are so many wonderful teachers and, you know, all the faiths, Buddhist teachers. So they are all teaching the right knowledge. People like, you know, Eckhart Tolle and all that. So this knowledge is coming back. But yes, if the knowledge dies, then... But the point is that always in the world there will be good and bad. Never the world is 100% bad or 100% good. Even at the time of Krishna and Rama, you know, there were demons like Kansa and, you know, Ravana and all. So good and bad mixture is always there. But in Satya Yuga, they were predominantly good. In Kali Yuga, there's predominantly not so much bad people, but materialistic people. Materialistic people who are only interested in material progress, not in spiritual growth. And you look around you also, majority of the people are, all they're interested in is where my next meal is coming from, or where my next million is coming from. You know, that's all they're interested in. So very few people want to know, who am I, where did I go to. So if the majority of the population is materialistic, then, you know, what is happening in the world right now, you will see that's...
You know, it seems like in the West, maybe the whole world, that knowledge has been lost, you know?
Yes.
You know, the whole phrase, God is dead, that became a real buzzword, kind
mm-hmm.
of saying, God is dead, God
right.
is dead. And it was like then, what developed after that in the West has been pretty bad, you know, communism, fascism.
True.
Hundreds of millions of people. Is it possible if knowledge is lost
to
find it again?
Right. Well, it could happen that we could have a third world war and the whole earth may be eliminated. You know, it could happen.
Yeah, right.
But if it does, so what? You know, there are millions of planets, billions, and all of them have life. And somewhere else life is going on. And then earth will be recreated. So in the total consciousness, Earth is a tiny little planet in among the billions of planets, and a tiny little, and we think we are very important. Oh, what happens if the Earth gets destroyed? Nothing will happen. The consciousness will go on. In fact, there is a cartoon I had told that long time back. So, you know, in the days when Russia and America were staring at each other in Cuba, and there were nuclear missiles going on, and so there was a cartoon where there was this picture of this nuclear bombs going off and all the earth collapsed and all the buildings collapsed and everything ended and mankind has ended. That was the first cartoon. The second cartoon was, there was this male and female monkey and they say, oh, I guess we have to start all over again. So creation will start all over again, if not here, in some other planet. But yeah, if it happens, it happens. So what? You know, life, see, this is not the only life we have lived. That's what Krishna tells Arjuna in the fourth chapter. We have lived many lives. If not here, we'll be born in some other planet, in some other galaxy, some other cosmos. So that total consciousness is the one. You know, we might go from place to place. It really doesn't matter. We take things too seriously. Main thing is, how am I progressing spiritually? Am I getting closer to God or not? And if I am, then He will take care of me. And wherever I die, I will continue my journey. So if I can do a little bit to evolve myself and make the world a better place, that's all I can do. I cannot worry about what's happening in Korea, whether they're having nuclear weapons, or what's happening in Middle East or Iran. That's okay. Just let Him take care of it. But thank you. That's a good question. Did I answer?
Yeah.
I have one comment. Seems like, you know, what Sri Krishna is saying to Arjuna is trying to ground Arjuna in spirituality. Because I think Arjuna is very knowledgeable. He's very skillful.
Right.
But he's shaken. And so, and if I see how it occurs to us, me, in today's world, it happens, right? We have all the skills, but at times we are shaken by the realities of the world, what comes our way. And I think what the Lord is doing is grounding Him in spirituality. So I think the same lessons can be used for us individually in today's world. And that's incredible that same lessons can be used in today's world as well.
Yes. Yes, very true. No, thank you. I couldn't agree more. Absolutely. That's why this Gita is still so valid. That's why we are talking it today. And that's why Gurudev wrote his commentary. He wrote it in the early 60s. And because he felt, that's what happened when he left his guru from the Himalayas. He came down to earth to spread this knowledge of Gita and Upanishads to all of us.
I'm looking forward to the rest of the chapter 3 because I've not read the Gita before, so still the question is in my mind, was the, you know, the mayhem that was created by Mahabharata, was it worth it, right?
Right.
So, and we, that's, you know, sometimes we go through our individually in today's
right.
world, when we take action, is it worth this action, right?
Right.
So I'm really looking forward to it.
Thank you. No, it's like there's a cancer in your arm. You know, you have to cut it at the shoulder. You cannot say, oh, I love my arm, I'm going to dress it and I'm going to bandage it. No, you have to chop it off. So they were basically a cancer on the society, and there was no choice. I mean, they, you know, Krishna tried to negotiate with them, talk to them, but they were not ready and they were menaced. So they had to be eliminated. You cannot, if there's a cancer in your body, you cannot leave it. You have to cut it off so that the rest of the body may survive. So for India's future, those 100 evil brothers had to be eliminated, right?
Right, but you know, along with them, there were all those great people like Vishvadama and
Ramacharya
and all,
right,
you know, Karna and all the great souls
yes.
were also eliminated.
Because they chose the wrong side. See, if they had supported the Pandavas, they would have been fine. They supported the wrong side. Even a good person, if he fights on the side of evil, then he becomes evil. See, if you cooperate with evil, even if you don't resist, you are a partner in that. So not only they did not resist, but they actively participated in the war, and they were actually killing. They killed Abhimanyu. All of them got together, Bhishma and Drona and Karna, and all of them surrounded Abhimanyu. Even though he was a single, the rule of war was that one Yodha has to fight with one. But all, there were, I don't know, 14 or so Maharathis who surrounded him and killed him, and he was single. So they chose to be on the path of good. You know that story of. So I think once you support evil, you become evil. That's what Gandhiji also says, that if you do not resist evil, you are a partner in that.
Actually, if I can add to that,
sure.
Because last week I was teaching the Balviya class and we were talking about characters in Mahabharata. And Swami Tejomananda's commentary was, Bhishma Pitamaha, the thing is, he knew Pandavas were right.
Right.
But the reason he supported Kauravas was because he promised his father, like, he'll
right.
be loyal to whoever serves, whoever is on the throne of Hastinapura.
Right.
So
in the end, Swami Tejamananda's commentary is you shouldn't go by the exact words. He said, I'll be loyal to Hastinapura, but he didn't, he should have seen if he's right. Hastinapura throne was not taking the right decision. So he said, that's one thing Swami Tejamananda's commentary was, you shouldn't take words literally. So even though Kingdom is doing wrong, he had to, because he was bound for his words. That's pretty much why he got me. And Dronacharya also, he said a similar thing. Dronacharya became a teacher for Kaurava Pandavas just to avenge Drupada, because Drupada insults him when he goes for a cow. He says, and then he becomes the teacher for the princely kingdom, and then they paid him as a teacher, he has to be again loyal to the throne. He knew better, but he says his unbrahmanic qualities, because he was not supposed to be doing that. Does it just to avenge Drupada. So both of them, though individually they are great people in their own right, everyone has some flaws here and there. But even though they fought on the side of Kauravas, inside their blessings were with Pandavas.
With the Pandavas,
So that's why he says they never gave 100%. Otherwise, Pandavas wouldn't have won. Because they were outnumbered, and they never fought 100% is what he said.
True.
Otherwise, there is no way they would have won.
True. No, Bhishma had Ichha Mrityu. He could decide when he has to die. And he chose not to, very good, thank you.
They are bound to the other side, but inside they were never 100% true. Side was right.
True, thank you. We have some upcoming events, so I'll just cover those. Today we have Gita chanting competition, if any of you have children in that. May 13th, we have Mother's Day. Actually, before that, May 8th. This coming Tuesday, we are celebrating Puja Gurudev, Swami Chinmayananda Ji's 102nd birth anniversary. So from 7 to 8:30 p.m., we have Guru Paduka Puja, followed by dinner on Tuesday, May 8th. And then May 13th is also, we are celebrating Gurudev's birthday in Bal Vihar. This Tuesday will be only for those who choose to come, but on May 13th, we'll have half a class. We'll have a class from 11 to 11:30 or 11:40 or so. And then we'll go into the hall. We'll do the Guru Paduka Puja May 13th. And then followed by Mother's Day celebration. So Satish Bhai and Vimalji, Vimal and all of the others are preparing a beautiful meal. So all the mothers and children can eat. So that is on May 13th, Mother's Day celebration. And there will be Gurudev Jayanti. But May 8th is his actual Jayanti, which we will celebrate in the evening. And then May 20th is graduation. That is the last day of Bal Vihar. So in every class, children who are graduating will go to the next class. Teachers will give them little prizes. And then the seniors who are graduating, going to college, will be speaking. So that is in May. Then June 4th to 6th, Swami Chidatmananda Ji will be talking on devotion. It's a beautiful elixir of devotion. It's a very beautiful topic. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhina, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukha Bhavet. Shanti, 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 Hari Om. Hari Om. Thank you very much.